First, like to say that, well, I hope when the lights are off, there'll be enough light to take notes. If not, mention it. I'd like to begin by stating it's a pleasure and an honor to be here today, and I'm very thankful to have this opportunity to share my ideas with you. During the course of this seminar, I'll be covering some fairly in-depth neuroanatomy of the peripheral and central nervous system. And if at any time I fail to make myself clear on any point to anybody, please stop me, because I'm sure some of the things I'll take for granted won't be common knowledge. In 1972, with the reintroduction of acupuncture to the West, there was an initial surge in scientific interest in the study of the biological basis of acupuncture. And this was mostly centered around current theories of pain and its control and anesthesia during surgery. These theories were, for instance, the gait control theory of pain, as espoused by Ronald Melzack and Patrick Wall. And this theory was primarily saying that acupuncture stimulated certain nerves in the periphery, which were, on a level in the central nervous system, able to cancel out or gate painful impulses due to the surgeon's knife. However, research on acupuncture conducted during the 70s was generally characterized by exceedingly poor controls and conflicting results. Some of the studies showed absolute 100% anesthesia in all subjects. Those were mostly done by Asians in China and Japan, to studies done in the United States showing an actual lowering of the pain threshold, an increase of pain during surgery. The scientific literature on acupuncture is very diverse, and there really are not many very firm findings as far as how acupuncture may cause anesthesia during surgery. After 11 years of research, it is not generally accepted in scientific circles that acupuncture is able to produce anesthesia during surgery at all, let alone accomplish any of the things having to do with five elemental theory. And we'll be examining what are the reasons for that later on in the seminar. Most scientists want to know if acupuncture works, not how it works. Currently, very little research on acupuncture is being done in the United States. Most of it's being done in China, and there's very limited access to full accounts of the work being done there in English. All leading researchers in this country that I have talked to in the field of acupuncture have turned their research interests to more traditional, easily fundable questions, such as rat models of homosexuality and other things that scientists like to examine. However, a review of the scientific literature suggests that even the best Western scientists had very little idea what acupuncture was really about, which is why their work produced generally conflicting results. Most of them didn't really understand what it was they were examining. At present, virtually no research has been done on acupuncture in the English-speaking world, as far as I can discern from the available literature. Evaluating acupuncture within the context it was formulated as a holistic, preventive healing art. Toward this end today, I will be examining the mind-body relationships postulated by five elemental theory and their possible basis in biological reality as dictated by our current knowledge of the structure and function of the nervous system. I will also be discussing the energetic relationships found in five elemental theory as relates to the possible biological basis for the human aura and its role in differing health states. I'd like to point out at the beginning that this presentation represents work I presented to the neuroscience community and scientific community at the University of Michigan and was my student seminar there toward my master's degree. It has gone fairly unchanged for this crowd, so a lot of the work in the beginning 10, 15 minutes or so will probably be a review of concepts you're familiar with as far as the history and philosophy of Oriental medicine, Chinese traditional medicine, and acupuncture. It will, however, serve as a firm base for the rest of the seminar. And I guess the take-home messages will be that the Chinese had a very interesting concept of mind-body relationship, a distinction really not made in Chinese science, but very much so in American science, in Western science. Historically, acupuncture was never used for producing anesthesia during surgery or for merely the symptomatic relief of pain. And I would now like to put acupuncture in a historical perspective briefly and try to explain some of the reality of the oldest medical science and healing art. The diagnostic system on which acupuncture was based, according to whom you read, dates from about 4000 to 2500 BC. The philosophical foundations, of course, of Taoism, Confucianism, and the prevailing Chinese thought date back to antiquity. I don't think anyone could even begin to put a date on that. The use of needles, according to archaeological evidence in Chinese traditional medicine, dates to around 600 BC. And the Nei Ching, which is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, medical text currently in existence, and of course the head text in acupuncture dates to around this time, 600 BC as well. The peak of the development and utilization of acupuncture as a healing art is around the 7th to 14th century AD and provided the sole source of medical care, of course, with its allied health sciences, the herbal medicines, for about a quarter of the world's population. The development of acupuncture, however, began to decline with a synthesis of Neo-Confucian thought during the Song Dynasty, around 1200 AD. Confucianism was characterized by a highly rational systemization of social phenomena, much, of course, like we find in America and the West today. Tragically, the people grew complacent thinking because of the great breakthroughs which Confucianism had made on the social level, that it could not ultimately solve all of life's problems. And thus the people became very complacent with what Confucianism could achieve. Healthcare and training of doctors fell under the auspices of the state, which reduced medical research and the development of five elemental theory of the acupuncture system to a trickle. This is unfortunately much the same situation as we see in the United States today, people becoming very complacent with the scientific paradigm we're using, thinking it can solve all of our life's problems, and the government, National Institute of Health, National Institute of Mental Health, really cutting back on basic biological research under the Reagan administration. Development of acupuncture waned, yet continued to be the prevalent form of health care in the Orient, even after the introduction of Western medicine to Asia in the late 1600s. However, more or less practical knowledge of acupuncture was lost, and it largely became more or less a cookbook method of healing. That is to say, anybody who has a headache goes to an acupuncturist, and the acupuncturist puts a needle in the headache spot and cures them regardless of the person who has the disease. And of course, the person who had the disease was more important always in Chinese traditional medicine. Who has the disease? Rather, which disease does an individual have? The first case of acupuncture anesthesia was performed by the Chinese medical workers in 1958, performing a tonsillectomy on a Chinese medical worker who was allergic to the anesthesia. And they reasoned, since acupuncture can be used after surgery to help alleviate the pain, the after pain of surgery, maybe it can be used during surgery to alleviate the pain. And in fact, this worked and was the first case of acupuncture anesthesia. In 1972, acupuncture was reintroduced to the West, mostly America. It had still been used in Europe for a long time. And it was reintroduced as this cookbook method of healing to the scientific community. The person I work for, Dr. Kenneth Casey, is one of the leading researchers in the world on the neurological basis of pain. He was asked to go to China in 1972 to see acupuncture done. And the acupuncturist there told him it didn't matter where you placed the needles, didn't really matter how long the stimulation was. The people, if they wanted, could pick out where the needles are placed. That form of acupuncture is open to some criticism, I think, at least according to the traditional method. What then is acupuncture? And I would now like to briefly present the philosophical and diagnostic system upon which acupuncture rests, in the hope of establishing acupuncture as a scientific discipline. But first, what are the criteria of a scientific discipline? According to Manfred Porkert, these are positive observation, controlled experiment, logical systemization and integration of ideas, and precise reproduction of results. However, these are the four criteria utilized by the most stringent of Western sciences, analytical chemistry and physics. Many forms of Western science, perhaps physiological psychology, social psychology, fall short of at least one of these criteria. In fact, I'd like to make the case with Manfred Porkert that controlled experiment is not needed as the criterion of a scientific discipline and is often only included as a criterion because of its confusion with analytical method. For instance, astronomy, which is an observational science, has done entirely without controlled experiment from antiquity until this date, and I don't think even people in the scientific community would doubt the validity of that discipline. Acupuncture may perhaps be defined as the observational science of the functional relationships responsible for maintaining health and alleviating sickness in human beings. The crucial test, I think, of any scientific system other than positive observation, and we certainly have plenty of precedent for that in acupuncture, is criterion 3 and 4, the logical systemization of ideas and precise reproduction of results. Well, how are these obtained? They're obtained by a reference to a system of standards. Of course, in the West, we use the CGS system, the centigrams, grams, seconds system. And the Chinese used 5 elemental or 5-phase theory. That one is out of order, unfortunately. There we go. Fire, earth, metal, water, wood. I'm sure you've all seen this slide or poster in one form or another while you've been here. The model reflects the tradition in which it was formulated. The Chinese believe that the unifying force of the universe is the Tao, whose movements are reflected in the positive and negative principles, yin and yang. The Chinese believed that by studying the dynamic processes of nature, they could understand humans, which were viewed as a macrocosm of the universe. And this is a favorite slide of mine that I made up. You might not find it as interesting. On the left, we have a picture of the asteroid, Rosh Alum, 250 million miles from Earth, and these are stars. On the right, we have a picture of DNA and a tobacco mosaic virus at a 250,000 magnification that I took in the electron microscope. And it's a fairly good representation of the fact that the same basic structures are repeated from the infinitely small to the infinitely large, really the basis of 5-elemental theory. The law of 5 phases describes the character and relationships of the identifiable processes of human nature. These processes are thought to be reflected in the phases fire, earth, metal, water, and wood, thus named because of their rich association value for the Chinese, who lived in primarily an agricultural society. Each element has a variety of properties which are expressed in every realm of human function, from the physical to the mental level. As I said, a distinction never made in Chinese science, which studied the energetic processes underlying all phenomena. Wood corresponds, green corresponds to spring, growth, and the development of plans and strategies. Fire corresponds to summer, representing maturing and development. Earth, or yellow, represents late summer and is characterized by a slowing of growth and beginning of consolidation and assimilation of that which has been attained. White, or metal, is the autumn and is the time of harvest and accounting for all that has been achieved. And water, the winter element, or blue, is the time when benefits of work are concentrated and stored for a new growth during the next phase, which of course is spring. And for the rest of this seminar, I'll be concentrating mostly on the heart organ, the acupuncture points which are used to treat the heart organ, and the nerves underlying those acupuncture points. So let's examine what some of the descriptive adjectives of the heart or fire energy are. Personality traits or physical traits, adjectives used to describe heart, would be maturity, warmth, increasing, exuberance, sexuality, productivity, and blossoming. The season, summer, the color, seen as an energy field around an individual, is red, and we'll be discussing that at length later. The odor is scorched. The sound and emotion in the voice would be laughter or joy. The tissue is the blood vessels or the vascular system. The organ, the heart, bowel, small intestine, orifice, ear. The taste involved with a macrobiotic diet is bitter. And the climate is heat. And I've gone through these basically to emphasize the fact that there were a wide variety of considerations taken into account during Oriental diagnosis. And in some way, these properties must be reflected in, or may be reflected in, the acupuncture points associated with them. During diagnosis, the physician examines the qualities of each element in an individual by giving an extensive psychological and physical examination. The acupuncturist notes, for instance, psychologically, appropriateness of affect. Is there an improper joy or laughing sound in a patient's voice when they are obviously discussing something very painful to them? The physical exam is concerned with structural imbalance on the body, lesions, ability to sense heat on both right and left sides of the body, and checking the body for points known as alarm points, which will become important later in our discussion, to see if they are unduly sensitive to touch. This is not really very different from a basic neurological workup that you get at any Western hospital. Just the things they're looking at and interpreting them to mean are different. But seeing if a patient can sense heat on either side of the body, checking for lesions or structural imbalance, is certainly not without precedence in Western medicine. In a healthy individual, all elements should be present throughout the year. People should always be making plans and achieving the benefits of their old plans. An acupuncturist's job is to detect energy imbalances resulting from blocked energy flow between the elements and correct them before they lead to illness. This is the meaning of preventive medicine, and brings us to an important point considering the phrase energy, as I have been and will continue to use throughout this seminar. As stated, the Chinese believed that the unifying force of the universe was divided into positive and negative principles. When these interact to produce life, they may be called qi energy or qi energy. Each element is connected to every other element by a creative, on the outside, and a destructive cycle. Thus, fire creates wood, limits metal, is limited by water, and is created by wood. I hope I said that right. The creative and the destructive cycles and the energies are represented on the body as a series of points called meridians. As long as the flow of qi remains unimpeded through these meridians, health is maintained. However, as in any biological system, for instance, oxidative phosphorylation performed in the mitochondria, which is basically electron transport, if electron transport is blocked chemically, at any step in the chain, regulative mechanisms will no longer function and disease will result. The key concept then, or a key concept in Chinese traditional medicine, is balance, harmony, and homeostasis, a concept proposed in the West during the late 1800s. Acupuncture may be considered in a way to be a unified field theory of human health, a system concerned with regulating the dynamic processes of human nature, and a preventive form of medicine, primarily. As Jonathan Clait has stated, the Chinese realized 4,000 to 6,000 years ago, as modern physics, that the more detail we include of a relative phenomena in our description, the larger our effective part plays in that description, and the less accurate our description is for differing circumstances, which is a possible advantage of Chinese diagnosis, according to five elemental theory, which allows sufficient flexibility in analysis to permit the study of a great variety of phenomena, which concludes the first part of this, the introduction. And I'd like you to take away from the introduction that two points which are central to Asian diagnosis and treatment are that the health of the mind-body is reflected in and may be treated by the manipulation of discrete points on the periphery, and that there is a subtle energetic state reflected in these points and manipulated during therapy. During the rest of the seminar, I will present evidence which I believe supports these assertions according to known neuroanatomical relationships and fact. However, it will be speculation on my part in that the experiments have not been done to show this is how actually acupuncture works. As I said, the experiments being done are all animal models, and it would be very hard for me to even begin to know how to evaluate an animal for fire energy or earth energy for the personality traits involved. As I said, it will be some of this may be foreign to you, some of the description of the peripheral and autonomic nervous system. Please stop and ask questions. Acupuncturists maintained health by examining for energy blockage on the meridians, which prevented homeostatic mechanisms from working properly, which prevented the relationship seen in five elemental theory from working properly. During the 1930s and 40s in this country, Western doctors discovered discrete zones of muscular tenderness, which were found to be associated with various myofascial disorders and pain syndromes. These were known as trigger points, because manual pressure or needle insertion into the point could alleviate the pain syndrome after initially recreating it. Thus, when a Western doctor found a trigger point, he would insert a needle into this point, which would initially briefly recreate the pain syndrome and then help cure it. When reading about trigger points, one is impressed on every level with their similarity to acupuncture points. The work on trigger points, for anybody interested, was done by Kennard and Haugen, Sola and Williams, and Travell and Rinsler. Janet Travell and Ronald Melzack have an article in the 1982 Postgraduate Medicine, which is a coverage of a symposium on trigger point therapy and its relationship to acupuncture. That's Postgraduate Medicine, if anybody's interested in following that up. Postgraduate Medicine. Melzack and Janet Travell. Yes, it's an article by the two of them. Look under Travell. She will be the senior author. I can... What?
Which issue?
1982. Look it up in Medical Index. I'm sorry, I don't have more specific information. So comparing acupuncture points with trigger points, and I've taken the description of trigger points from the literature found during the 40s and 50s, both are located in the same people with the same disorders. Both, when an acupuncture point is blocked, or a trigger point forms, may be a spot of deep tenderness and tightness in muscle. They are found all over the body. They are always found in areas of referred pain, and I'll be discussing that at length. They can both, a blocked acupuncture point or a trigger point, cause soreness, resist stretching in muscle, and severely shorten the muscle. They are treated by dry needling or manual pressure. This is very interesting. People studying referred pain from the heart, and this is often, I think, you know, when people have heart attacks, they often grab for their arm because they feel a pain there. This is referred pain caused in the periphery by an internal organ. They wanted to see if putting Novocaine, injecting it into a trigger point in the periphery, would stop the pain being caused by the heart. And what they found is, well, in fact it did, but you didn't need Novocaine at all. Merely placing a needle in the trigger zone would be enough to relieve the condition and to help alleviate the underlying symptomology of the cardiac disease. We'll be talking more about that. After treatment, the tightness in the muscle may disappear, the muscle relaxes, and heat and numbness is produced, known as the Tai Chi sensation in acupuncture, and spontaneous and or permanent relief after several treatments. Both acupuncture and trigger point therapy are used to treat muscle injury and strain, headache, arthritis, rheumatism, And the trigger points we use to treat paresthesia and hypesthesia. This essentially is our symptomologies of hysterical or emotionally caused diseases in Western phraseology. Of course, in traditional Chinese medicine, all diseases would have an emotional component. Paresthesia being a state where it's like anesthesia, emotionally caused anesthesia in the periphery, and pins and needle sensation. And hypesthesia being increased sensitivity of the periphery. Ronald Milzak did a comparison between all the trigger points reported in the trigger point literature and all the acupuncture points. And he found that for all the 60 trigger points reported in the literature, there was an acupuncture point within 1 centimeter of every trigger point reported. And let me emphasize, the Western doctors doing this research had never heard of acupuncture before. I assume this is true, because if they had, you think they would have reported it in their papers, and there's no mention of knowledge of acupuncture at all. There's a 100% correlation between trigger points and acupuncture points as far as location, and a 71% correlation for diseases treated. Thus, if a trigger point therapist or a doctor, a physical therapist, used the point to treat diseases of the shoulder or cardiac pain or cardiac position, a cardiac disease condition, thank you, sir, then the same disorder and points are treated by acupuncturists. And yes?
Well, I'd like to know if when you have referred pain from a cardiac area to a trigger point,
yes,
and you treat the trigger point and the pain goes away, does the cardiac disease change?
Well, we'll be talking about that later, but in fact, one of the benefits of acupuncture is in fact in hypertensive people, causing the blood pressure to go back to a normal range, and in hypotensive people causing it to come up. That is to say, acupuncture can cause vasodilation, an increase in blood flow, which is often the cause of referred pain from the heart, is a decrease in blood supply to the heart, which causes the heart to spasm. We'll be discussing that more later.
Your figures here refer to the relief of the pain at the trigger point. Is that what you're talking about?
My figures here merely refer to the organ being treated. Thus, if a trigger point therapist put a needle in here to treat an associated heart condition, that is also a point used by an acupuncturist to treat an associated heart condition or the heart meridian, for instance, heart 1. Okay? If that may become clearer later. Yes?
You said the correlation of the trigger point and the acupuncture point was that the 100%
or 70%? In location, for every trigger point described, there is an acupuncture point within a centimeter. Within 1 centimeter, which is awfully small given.
So the trigger point wasn't always the same, although the same condition?
No, the trigger points are associated with a wide variety of myofascial disorders. I think, you know, for instance, if you get tightness in your neck or tightness in a muscle due to anxiety, for instance, you feel a knot there, that would be a trigger point. Many forms of massage therapy look for the tensest point in the muscle and try to relax that. What they're essentially looking for is the trigger point.
I was just wondering if in the heart trouble you were speaking of, if there tended to be a relationship of the trigger point being at the same point for everyone of a similar condition.
All people with referred cardiac pains tend to develop the same trigger points in the same locations, which are all acupuncture points used to treat the heart. Well, that's my seminar. If I told it to you all now. At any rate, having explained that, it is my belief that it is highly improbable that two systems of treatment using the same methodology of treatment, namely needling, using the same points for the same disorders, could have evolved in two different cultures, 6,000 years apart, if either are due to the placebo effect or hypnosis, which seems statistically very improbable. If it was placebo or hypnosis, we would expect that the location of the point would make no difference whatsoever. And having considered the relationship between acupuncture points and trigger points, I would now like to consider their locations relative to the peripheral nervous system and the relations to regions of referred cardiac pain. All information on acupuncture points, their location, and their use was taken from the 1982 edition of the Anatomical Atlas of Chinese Acupuncture Points, published by the Shangdong College of Traditional Medicine in China, of traditional Chinese medicine. So it's a fairly up-to-date account of which points are being used. What we have in the upper left-hand corner under trigger zones in cardiac patients are the 8 trigger points most frequently associated with cardiac decision, cardiac conditions, and heart disease, and disorders of the shoulder, for instance, rheumatism, arthritis, disease, myofascial disorders which limit the function and the use of the shoulder and neck. Note here we have point 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the front. Point number one corresponding to... Okay, at any rate, we have these 4 points and these 4 points, all of which are acupuncture points. And please notice point number 4 here, which you can see to be in the same location as point number 1, the origin of the heart meridian. The heart meridian, which travels from the shoulder down the arm on the inside of the arm to the tip of the pinky. In fact, if one reads the referred pain literature, the description of referred cardiac pain during an attack of angina, pectoris, or heart attack is often a pain beginning in the upper shoulder, traveling down the inside of the arm to the tip of the pinky. Here we have the 4 points that I've circled in red, the trigger points used to treat cardiac conditions or diseases of the shoulder, in red. And the names, the Chinese names, are underlined here. I don't know how well everyone can see this. Please notice, however, that the bladder meridian is running down the back parallel to the spine at the intercostal spaces, which are the entrance points and exit points of the peripheral nerves, which we can see on this side in yellow. Thus, these 2 points here correspond to these 2 points, and we can see they directly overlie the peripheral nerve. Thus, any acupuncture needle placed into these 2 points are going to affect superficially in the skin and muscles nerves from the spinal segment above, and deeply nerves from the spinal segment adjacent. Thus, this trigger point, or acupuncture point, bladder 15, when a needle is put into it, will affect nerves from the 4th and 5th spinal process, superficially, and from the 5th and 6th on a deep level. And I'd like to call your attention to the fact that there are such things as alarm points in acupuncture. The sensitivity of these points are thought to specifically reflect the health state of the organ that they correspond to. Bladder 15 and the trigger point described in the 1950s is in fact the warning point for the heart meridian, the alarm point. The point for the pericardium meridian would be the one directly above it. Please keep that in mind.
Do you look at associated effect points?
I haven't looked at that. No, I haven't. If you'd like to discuss that further afterwards, we can certainly go over. This now is just a diagram of those 2 points. Actually, it's a point, 1 or 2 points above them, but the relationship of the needle here to the nervous system will be the same for all of the points going down the bladder meridian parallel to the spinal process. Superficially, the nerves which innervate these muscles come from the spinal segment above, and deeply they go to the spinal segment adjacent. Here we have the dorsal and the ventral horn of the spinal cord. The dorsal horn is the part of the spinal cord which receives all incoming sensory information, which is going to travel up to the brain. And thus the nerve is at the level of the dorsal roots and is affecting.
How superficial is the nerve?
Oh, well, of course, this nerve will run out to the skin. And affect
all. You're putting the needle in. How long is that needle?
Well, think of how thick the skin on your back is. Really, this is only a couple of millimeters. I mean, this here's the bone right here, the spinal process. If you feel,
I think that's a lot more than a couple of millimeters.
Does at least depend the persons, but at least from 1.5 to 2 centimeters.
Okay. So, and how long is an acupuncture
needle?
Needle
that deeply?
Sure.
Okay, I can't defend this because I'm not an acupuncturist. These drawings were made by the traditional acupuncture group in Shandong, and what they did is needled cadavers and then did histological sections to describe the relationship. I can't defend their methodology. This is at any rate only a general slide of the position of the needle as far as angle and depth, and we can see the needle terminates at around there. Point of entry and exit of the peripheral root. We can also see here the sympathetic nervous system, the sympathetic chain, dorsal root, ventral root with all outgoing motor information, and the vascular system.
So which muscle is the trigger point associated?
Well, this is one for one I'm not really, this was used merely as illustration. It's not one of the either point 15 or 16 on the bladder meridian. It's point fei shu, two above that, and here are the names of the different muscles. So for instance, we have rhomboideus and muscle erector spinae. I'm not very good at the Latin translation of the terms. The second picture up on the right is what is called a dermatomal map. And what a dermatome is, the area of skin innervated by a given spinal segment. Thus, for instance, here we have T5. What that is telling us is that all sensory information going to the spinal cord is going over the nerves that come from the spinal segment T5. And all of the movements of the muscle in that area of skin are affected by nerves coming from the spinal cord at the level of T5. It's only general, these maps differ from person to person. What I've done is drawn the acupuncture points up top there on the front and back, and the trigger points, and in red is the region of referred cardiac pain from the heart during a heart attack. We can see that all the acupuncture points used to treat cardiac conditions or diseases of the shoulder are in the area of cardiac pain. One of the criticisms often made by Western scientists is, well, my God, how can a point on the hand or the tip of the pinky use to treat the heart? They think it reflects the ignorance of the people who devised the acupuncture system. But we can see that even these three points on the wrist right here, or the point on the tip of the pinky, even though they're far from the heart, are in fact innervated by nerves. They are in the area of referred pain and innervated by nerves, as we will see, which also innervate the heart, which go to the same spinal segment as the nerves which go to the heart and come from the heart. I'd like to point out that although there are many other meridians which run up the outside of the arm in the wide area, there were no points that I was able to find which are generally used to treat cardiac conditions outside of the area of referred pain from the heart. And all points that I was able to find generally used to treat cardiac conditions are within the area of referred pain from the heart.
Does the red zone refer to the innervation that comes from T5? Or does it represent the pain syndrome?
It represents the pain syndrome, and the innervation is easily read by looking at the various numbers. T5 traveling around, T3, then we have T1. Coming down here, and then on the back, of course, you've got your various dermatomes. Thus, so far, I have hoped to have shown so far that acupuncture points were not randomly chosen, as is often assumed, and that their acupuncture points may reflect the underlying neural innervation. This point here is a point that was used to treat cardiac conditions and diseases such as arthritis and rheumatism, lack of use of turning the neck or the shoulder, limiting their use. And I think a lot of people know when they're very stressed, they take their tension out at this point. You know, I often like to get back rubs there myself during exam time, or any other time for that matter. And then the black area shows the muscle which that point is associated with, and the stippled area shows all the regions on the head, according to the neurological innervation and pain syndromes, that one point can affect. Thus, if that point's tight, people, you know, have a hard time turning their neck moving their arms. And this was used in trigger point therapy to treat people with hysterical neuroses, people who felt things. For instance, they'd say they felt bugs crawling on their head or their shoulders, or said for no apparent reason they couldn't turn their head. And doctors were unable to find any structural reason for this. It's generally termed hysterical neurosis, which is a word I think doctors use to make it sound like they know what they're talking about when they don't. But the important point is it reflects the fact that emotional variables can affect a trigger point or acupuncture point and be reflected in these points. Now we're going to get into start some in-depth anatomy of the nervous system. What I have here is a diagram of the autonomic nervous system. I have outlined in red the nerves going to the heart from the nervous system, thus carrying any information from the sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system, which are the two components of the autonomic nervous system. And it's interesting in this respect that autonomic means self-governing in Latin. And of course, heart, the heart meridian, is the self-governor in traditional acupuncture.
The message now continues on side two. Please stop this cassette and turn it over.
Fifth being the alarm point on the bladder meridian, and the point just above it, not drawn here, would be the alarm point for the pericardium meridian. Now, what's important here is this piece of information, that the nerves going to the heart leave from spinal segments C1, cervical 1, in the spinal cord to T5. Okay? All information going from the central nervous system to the heart leaves from C1 to T5. All incoming information, even that which ascends to the very high level of the sympathetic chain, cervical 1, which is going to be right around here.
C7. Where you pointed on your neck.
You know some?
C1 is.
You're right. But anyway, the point is the ones that go to C1 in the sympathetic chain descend in the sympathetic chain and enter the cord at the level T2 to T5. Thus, when an acupuncture needle is placed through the cardiac, through the heart alarm point on the bladder meridian, it is hitting the densest innervation of the heart and densest area of nerves coming from the heart in the entire body. That is to say, then, that it is not far-fetched to think that the health of the heart could, in fact, be reflected in two points lying superficially over the largest number of nerves in the body going to and coming from the heart. Is that clear so far? Thus, I hope to have shown, as I said, that acupuncture points were not randomly chosen and that there is an underlying neurological wisdom to their placement. And I'd like to say that the relationships I'm discussing do not hold true just for these two points, but hold true for the alarm points on the other meridians I've examined as well, for the bladder, for the kidney, and that I've merely chosen the heart to represent my work because the most information is available for it as far as referred pain goes. Very little is known about referred pain. Very little is known about pain. Most people spend half their papers deciding what the definition of it is before they get around to talking about what they've done in their experiments. In fact, in general, one of the problems in studying acupuncture scientifically is much more is known about Chinese traditional medicine than the nervous system. And I would now like to present a general model for the genesis of a trigger point, or I'm making a case for a blocked acupuncture point, which should be consistent with both Eastern and Western paradigms. As mentioned, trigger points are thought to result from a variety of phenomena. First, I'd like to make sure that everybody is clear in their minds what we're discussing. This is a cross-section of the spinal cord, this being the center. This is the dorsal horn, which carries all the incoming information to the central nervous system, all sensory information. This is the ventral horn, which has the cells, the outgoing motor cells to all the muscle, and carries all outgoing information. We have 1, 2, and 3 inputs to the dorsal horn carrying various information. And now, as a neuroscientist, at least neuroscientists believe that emotion and thoughts travel over nerves. And thus, if the brain is going to have any effect on the body, it is going to do so via nerves. And thus, any emotional variables which can affect the tightening of muscle or affect the body in any way must be carried over nerves coming from the brain down the spinal cord. And thus, we have the descending tracts in the spinal cord known as the dorsolateral funiculus, or DLF. That will be fine for most purposes. And these then, I am saying, carry descending cognitive variables, since if any emotional variables do in fact affect our body, they certainly affect it via these routes. We have also input to the dorsal horn of the spinal cord from the viscera. For the purpose of my discussion, this is from the heart, outlined in red. And we have incoming input from the periphery, from the muscles, from the skin, from the joints. And that comes over the somatic afferents, which carry information to the spinal cord. The outputs that we have are motor outputs to the muscle, labeled 3 in my diagram, and in red, sympathetic outputs going from the sympathetic motor nucleus in the spinal cord to the muscle. And these innervate the vasculature and sweat glands. They control autonomic activity, the state of dilation or constriction of the blood vessels, and the amount of sweat that is released. And thus, I have said that several variables can affect the formation of a trigger point. These are affective states coming over the descending tracts, such as stress, repression, anxiety, that may influence cells in the dorsal horn. We have two: diseased viscera, which via sympathetic afferents to the cord can provide input, and three, myofascial or peripheral disorders resulting from disease, stress, or injury, which can provide information to the central nervous system via the somatic afferents. These three inputs from the mind, from the internal organs, and from the peripheral body terminate in the dorsal horn and may affect two cells, the alpha motor neuron going to the muscles and the sympathetic neuron. Excessive input to the motor neuron may cause muscle shortening and rigidity known as defense guarding. This has been implicated in arthritis, rheumatism, splints, and 200 other myofascial disorders, which comprise the largest percentage of disability benefits paid in the United States. Thus, if acupuncture could do little more than help relieve muscular tension, it could help a great deal of people, a great many people, doing nothing more than that. Also, this input, of course, if the muscles of the neck or on the back are very tight, can cause headaches, loss of equilibrium, and all of these can result in pain and loss of function. Input to the sympathetic motor neuron here, and this is, of course, going to an acupuncture point or trigger point in the periphery, can cause vasoconstriction, causing the blood vessels to constrict. This decreases blood and oxygen supply to the muscles and the cells and can result in a great deal of diseases, referred pain syndromes, hypesthesia, as I said before, paresthesias, and it can also result in abnormal pseudomotor or sweat gland activity. Thus, many autonomic diseases are characterized and diagnosed in hospitals by measuring sweating or electrical conductivity of the skin, and that is mediated by the autonomic nervous system. Thus, increased or decreased input into the sympathetic motor neuron or the alpha motor neuron can lead to a diseased state in the periphery. Not shown in this diagram are the emotional effects caused by pain and loss of function, which can add to the cycle. Thus, initially, a peripheral insult or a central lesion may cause loss of function, loss of utilization of the hand during arthritis or rheumatism, turning of the neck. This can, of course, in fact, affect emotional variables, and thus we get a cycle set up called the pain spasm pain syndrome in the physical therapy literature, called the pain spasm pain syndrome. consistent with both traditional and modern thought, is that insertion of a needle into the trigger point or acupuncture point may interrupt or alter this cycle long enough for it to be broken. The muscle relaxes, which allows for its repair and the healing of associated conditions. Loss of pain and return of function may initiate positive psychic change. In this manner, by detecting energy blockage at an early stage, an acupuncturist may prevent a wide range of disorders. That is to say, at an early stage of disease, when the input from either emotional variables, peripheral variables, or visceral variables are starting to provide excessive input here, if in fact this is reflected in the periphery, if that energy blockage or generation of a trigger point can be detected, the acupuncturist then can effect a change toward better health. As predicted by both systems, if the underlying pathology is not cured, the disease will return. So the acupuncturist may have prescribed certain kung fu exercises or herbal remedies, which strengthen both mind and body. Also, the acupuncturist may have reinforced deficient personality traits, which could help heal emotional disharmony. The notion of maintaining health through manipulation of the musculature is the basis of chiropractic and osteopathic medicine, as well as many of other healing arts. And I would now like to examine some more specific neural circuitry for the processes I've been discussing. In the late 1960s, Pomeranz, Wall, and Weber, and Sulzer and Spencer in 1969 showed that somatic afferents coming from the periphery of the alpha-delta, which transmit pain, and alpha-beta variety, which carry impulses from the muscle, that these cells terminated on the same cells in the dorsal horn as visceral afferents. That is to say, a somatic cell coming from a point in the periphery, let's imagine an alarm point for the heart, ends in the same cell in the dorsal horn of the spinal cord that in fact cardiac afferents come from. That is to say that the heart and that point in the periphery may in fact excite a cell in the spinal cord. The black cells are somatic, the red cells are visceral, and the middle blue cells here, marked with a T, are transmission cells, ascending to the brain, first to the thalamus, and then the brain in the lateral spinal thalamic tract. The interneuron, in blue, is a cell which can affect the operation of the opposing cell. Various kinds of interaction were described. Somatic and visceral cells can both excite the same cell in the cord and inhibit the input of the other cell. Whichever cell here fires more will be the one that triggers and decides the frequency firing rate of this transmission cell. Somatic cells were found which could excite the transmission cell and knock out the input from the heart. Heart cells or cardiac cells were found which could knock out the input from the periphery. And mutual excitation was found, neither one inhibiting, and then unitary excitation was found, for instance, a cardiac cell exciting its own cell. And this may seem to you, well, every kind of interaction is possible. Well, this represents 1,000th, 1/100,000th of the different kinds of interactions which could conceivably take place in the dorsal horn of the spinal cord. I'd like to say, after I've just presented that there is an extremely complex interaction between somatic cells carrying information from, say, a needle being placed in the periphery, and visceral information carrying information from the heart at the segmental level of the spinal cord. I propose that in addition to the previously discussed mechanism of causing a muscle to relax, that at an early stage of internal disease, acupuncture may modulate the various transmission over these lines. That is to say, by placing a needle here and causing excitation of the somatic cell, you're changing the entire balance of information going to the brain as regards the state of the heart and as regards the state of periphery. At an early stage, an acupuncturist, by inserting a needle, may modulate this transmission over the pathways, which may alert higher centers, of the disease process and activate homeostatic mechanisms toward a return to health. And in this regard, pain is generally thought to have an adaptive value. But what could be the adaptive value of having referred pain during evolution? How could referred pain have evolved? Well, certainly, a million years ago or so during evolution, when surgical tools weren't available, except for blunt rocks, and I know they used them, but people had no way of healing their heart and didn't really understand the intrinsic workings of the body that well. Perhaps if the purpose of referred pain is to cause discrete zones of muscular tightness in the periphery, if manipulating this point on the periphery can actually heal internal conditions, we would get a selective advantage for the development of the meridian acupuncture point or trigger point system. Thus, a range of emotional, visceral, and somatic input may converge on the spinal cord, with their relative balance being reflected in discrete somatic areas. I'd like to digress for one moment and possibly, in answer to your previous question, discuss the effects of acupuncture on the cardiovascular system. This work was done by Omura, who's head of Acupuncture and Electrotherapeutics Journal. He used plasmography, which is a method of studying the regional blood flow through veins and arteries. And he found three phases of vasoresponsiveness to the insertion of an acupuncture needle. I call your attention right here. And essentially the main point here is that first the needle is inserted and vasoconstriction takes place, which usually lasts 15 to 30 seconds. This is accompanied by a brief pain due to the constriction of the vasculature. This is a local effect. Then the second phase is a quasi-control state, a return to control. We see constriction, control, constriction, control. And the third stage is vasodilation, that is an increase in the diameter, lasting for 2 minutes to 2 weeks. And here we have a measure of the blood flow in the left thumb and the right superior orbital artery before acupuncture. And here we have a measure of it, the blood flow after acupuncture. And the fact that the individual's blood pressure dropped from 190 to 100 to after acupuncture 135 over 90 with an increase in blood flow tells us vasodilation occurred. And you can see here that triglyceride, cholesterol, and phospholipid content in the blood decreased back to normal levels, statistically significant, for that individual over time. For the same duration of time the vasodilation occurred, about 2 weeks. Thus, we have three stages, constriction, return to control, and then vasodilation. And now we get into the real stuff, which is the complex neuroanatomy I was talking about. Please stop me again. I guess everyone's doing all right for that? Okay. Again, we have the dorsal and ventral horn of the spinal cord. I'd like to follow what the effects of acupuncture may be during an attack of cardiac pain, during a heart attack, or during a case of angina pectoris. The first step, okay, hold on. God, I'm losing people like a sinking ship here. Oh, really? Well, anybody who'd like to leave can go here. Oh, okay. Okay, so the first step in a case of angina pectoris or heart attack is going to be decreased blood supply to the heart. When this reaches a critical level, the heart will spasm to try to pump more blood. And of course, the heart spasming is going to increase the flow of afferent information over the sympathetic nervous system. And this goes up the sympathetic chain and enters the dorsal root of the spinal cord and terminates here. Yes. Afferent refers to incoming information. That is to say, from the fingers to the brain is afferent, from the brain to the fingers is efferent, with an E. So we have an increased flow of impulses over the sympathetic afferent. This will have two effects. The first effect is going to be to excite the transmission cell in the dorsal horn of the spinal cord. This arises in the lateral spinothalamic tract. the spinoreticular tract and spinocervical tract, I think lateral spinothalamic will be the most important, since that's generally the one thought to mediate most ascending painful impulses. Thus, increased flow, that excites this neuron, and we have signaled cardiac pain to the brain. The second effect is to send a collateral to the visceral motor nucleus, sympathetic motor nucleus, which can send a neuron up ipsilaterally in the spinothalamic tract. This will also excite cells in the sympathetic motor nucleus, which I have said go to the periphery, to the acupuncture point, to the musculature, and innervate the vasculature and sweat glands. Thus, this will cause the vasculature to constrict. As I said, we have decreased blood supply to the heart. The vasculature constricts. And since the vasculature is innervated by pain fibers, when it constricts, it causes a pain to be felt in the arm. That is the main theory of the genesis of referred pain. Oh, I see what's going on here. Okay, is that clear so far? Let's consider a case now where acupuncture is applied to the periphery at either or a trigger point. A needle is placed in this location during the attack. That is going to send information over the alpha-delta, alpha-beta fiber from the periphery. In other words, it's stimulating nerve cells wherever the needle is placed. That, on the segmental level, as I discussed before with the cardiac afferent, terminates here and is able to inhibit, via the interneuron I discussed, all input from the heart. It is able to knock that input out, and thus we have a decreased input already to the transmission cell from the heart. Thus, the first thing seen in trigger point therapy is application of the needle, and then after a short delay, a decrease in the amount of cardiac pain felt. However, it will be seen that this also must of necessity still excite the lateral spinothalamic tract, the transmission cell, and also continue vasoconstriction. Remember from Moore's work that after insertion of a needle, the first thing we saw was vasoconstriction. So we've put the needle in, it's inhibited this input, and continued the vasoconstriction here. Secondarily, though, Omori saw a vasodilation, which must by necessity, or probably comes over the descending tracts to the dorsal horn of the cord, and inhibit the input of the transmission cell and of the sympathetic motor neuron. Thus, with the sympathetic motor neuron inhibited, we have Omori's third phase of vasodilation. Vasodilation will increase the blood flow to the heart. Remember, this is not just a local effect, but is an effect measured at the orbital artery supplying blood to the brain as well as at the thumb, showing us vasodilation is occurring over the entire body. And
how
it will...
Vasodilation
occurs because this tract called the DLF descends from the raphe and uses serotonin as its neurotransmitter. It ends on cells in the dorsal horn, which use endorphins or enkephalins. These are inhibitory and are morphine-like compounds. These inhibit the input to the red pathway, sympathetic pathway, and can essentially knock it out. If I were to take an electrode in an experimental animal and deliver electrical current to this descending tract, it would feel no pain anywhere on its body.
Where is the substance P coming into this field?
Substance P is the transmitter released by this cell and causes pain. Thus, substance P is the transmitter which is mediating the initial pain in the first place. Substance P here, endorphins here. Endorphins can...
according to your theory, then endorphins are the one responsible for vasodilation. How come with 2 minutes time, the vasodilation occurs?
Okay. How come, why is there a delay? Okay, I'd like to point out...
I think what's the function of substance P besides a neurotransmitter?
Yes.
What's the substance P work on the smooth muscle?
Substance P works on the smooth muscle when released in the periphery. Here, substance P is being released in the spinal cord. There is no smooth muscle. Different transmitters can have entirely different modes of action at different levels of the nervous system. And as far as why the delay that you asked, I don't know why the delay. But there must be a good reason for it. And I hope we can discuss this more at length. Why don't I progress to the last part of the seminar? I hope to have shown so far, though, that by applying acupuncture, referred pain may be alleviated, that blood supply to the heart may cause vasodilation, which is the root of the trouble in the first place, and that trigger points and associated conditions will be prevented from developing. That is to say, people with cardiac conditions will often have sore musculature in this region. Well, if acupuncture is used initially, the trigger points will not be able to progress to a point where they are causing very severe arthritis, in theory. And of course, the ancient texts state that the superior physician treats before disease sets in. This undoubtedly affects the orientation of a preventive medicine, as well as possible limitations. If I was having a severe massive stroke, I'd probably want care from a Western medical facility as opposed to an acupuncturist, but I don't know. Maybe I probably would. And now I'd like to, the exciting part of this work for me is actually the energy relationships in acupuncture. So if you can give me about another 10 minutes, 15 minutes, will that be too much? Okay. I mentioned earlier that the ultimate cause of all disease was attributed to imbalances in qi energy associated with the meridians, and that this energy had a positive and negative component. And the analogy to electromagnetic energy, which is of course made of positive and negative components, is relatively apparent. Ultimately, we are all made of atomic particles bearing positive and negative forces, and our health state must be reflected at this level. That is not to say that electromagnetic energy is the same thing as qi energy, but may well be a readily quantifiable measure of qi energy, an aspect, a manifestation. I mentioned earlier that each energy is associated with a color, which with practice may be seen around an individual's body. Deficiency or excess of one or more of the five colors is thought to indicate imbalance in the individual's health, and I'm suggesting it is not far-fetched that each individual produces an electromagnetic field which reflects the sum total of all energetic processes going on in that person at a given moment, and that this electromagnetic field can indicate the individual's health state and be used in diagnosis. Of course, in the West, we take measurements in the electromagnetic spectrum all the time when we use EMG, EKG, EEG to measure the electrocardiogram, electroencephalogram, to measure neural activity. Robert O. Becker at the University of Syracuse did the following research. Using a wheel electrode to roll up and down meridians and measure electrical conductance along them, he generated the following plot, measured in Mohs, the reciprocal of ohms, conductance units. And the point here is that every time this wheel hits an acupuncture point, we hit a point of increased electrical conductance along that meridian. As we move away from that point toward the next one, the conductance decreases. We hit the next point and it increases. This plot was traced in the same individuals three times in a row, generating the same point. He used the following electrode here, which is actually 30 or 40 steel grids, and used the computer to read off the electrical conductance at each point in rapid succession. The entire grid is placed over an acupuncture point, and he generated the following plots. These are isotherms, and what we see here is the acupuncture point at the middle, and then as we go away, the acupuncture point is the point of highest conductance. As we go away in any direction, either distally, proximally, or dorsoventrally, we have a decrease in electrical conductance. What is important?
Give some sense of the scale of the change.
The scale of the change is the scale of the change is generally, from my experience, he didn't report the, it's not reported on these graphs I have here. The scale of the change is going to be about 1 megaohm at the center and about 400 or 500,000 kiloohms almost twice as much. It's reciprocal. So it's going to be about an order of magnitude, in some cases, at the center, larger conductance than in the periphery, even 3 or 4 millimeters away. Okay? So the point, the acupuncture point may have a resistance of, say, 300,000, and 3 millimeters away, the resistance will be a megohm. And oftentimes, mainly in China, and I guess around this country in Europe, they use acupoint meters. This is the basis. They're just meters which are measuring electrical conductance. People are locating acupuncture points with them. And here on the triple warmer meridian, the meridian is supposed to bend 30 degrees at point T4. And we can, in fact, see that the electrical conductance is bending 45 degrees, but in the same direction, which is very interesting. We have an electrical conductance changing directions with the meridian. This trace merely shows us that Obecker at some points found increased DC voltages of 5 millivolts over the surrounding area. The Chinese predicted that a decrease in energy at blocked acupuncture points would occur because of blockage, key energy blockage. An autonomic disease is associated with decreased electrical conductance, decreased electromagnetic energy at the points of autonomic disease. Trigger points are also characterized by abnormal electrical conductance. Thus, the concept of decreased energy flow at blocked acupuncture points may be related to the generation of a trigger point, which is typified by abnormal sweat gland activity and thus decreased electrical conductance, which implies a link with the autonomic nervous system, thought to maintain homeostasis in human beings. Further, decreased conductance along a meridian could subtract a related color from the electromagnetic field. And let's remember that light is just electromagnetic energy at a specific wavelength. And I guess I'll skip ahead just to show you the last slide. This was work done and sent to me unpublished by Stephen Rosenblatt, head of the Los Angeles College of Acupuncture. He did a very interesting experiment. He put three electrodes on the wrist, one at point lung 9, a non-hard point, and he put an electrode at a placebo point on the wrist, 2 centimeters from any known acupuncture point, and he put an electrode on heart 7 on the wrist. Thus, we have 3 electrodes on the wrist measuring electrical conductance. 2 at placebo points and 1 on the heart meridian. He asked individuals using biofeedback to monitor their heart rate. He first asked them to increase the rate of their heart using biofeedback. And what he found was that while the electrical conductance, even centimeters away, at 0 centimeters away from each other, stayed the same at the placebo points, when heart rate was increased, the electrical conductance increased at only the heart point and points studied on the heart meridian. When he asked the individuals to decrease their heart rate, the same thing was found. The electrical conductance stays the same on the heart, on all the other meridians, and lowers on the heart meridian itself.
Could the control points on the same dermatome?
Sure. And they would have to be in at least.
And did the point that responded correspond to any nerve?
Well, you can look up the dermatomal.
It
was probably the ulnar and radial nerve.
Was it on that nerve, though?
Well, it would have to. When you say on a nerve, it would have to be on the skin, which is certainly over branches of the nerve. Whether
if you covered the dermatome and had your placebo points on the same dermatome and had your actual test point on the nerve, then that would hold up your thesis.
Mm-hmm.
But if the actual test point was not on the nerve, but you're still on the same dermatome, then it's not neural.
Okay. I see what you're saying. The point is that the electron microscopy was certainly not done. What you'd have to do, we can have the lights now. This is, no, it's the other two next to that gentleman right there. Hit the light one. What you'd have to do would be to do the experiment, take a section through a human being's wrist, and then analyze exactly what the neural innervation was.
That study has been done. The time is here's the other innervation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's the triple one versus the median. So seven mm-hmm. here, so it's mm-hmm. median.
Okay,
that's
that
ordinary. Well, I don't know where placebo was.
Okay.
He wasn't on triple one. He was on the heart. On heart and on the lung.
Heart,
placebo.
Heart, lung, and placebo.
Yeah. So the triple warmer.
Why are you saying triple warmer?
Oh, no, sorry. So lung. So lung's here. So mm-hmm. lung's does the effect. Because the lungs is radial nerve.
Mm-hmm.
The heart's an ulnar nerve.
The
dermatome picture didn't show that.
No, but the main point is that there is sufficient dermatomal overlap, of course, to account for it. The dermatomes will overlap.
They do
overlap.
Not ulnar and the radius.
No, but
the
dermatomes, as far as looking at a dermatomal map, it's only general map. So that dermatome of one segment next to another will have an area of overlap.
One segment, what's the fundamental difference? Does that three already?
Well,
his picture was from C1 to T5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, C1 to T5.
Okay.
You get down with Joe and me in the.
I'll meet you downstairs. Okay.
There's a person down there that I want to hang out with.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
That was a symptomatic thing.
At any rate, the study of humankind can commence in two ways, either qualitatively or quantitatively, and both methods are complementary. Neither is better, and both provide important insight into humans' nature. And it is my hope that someday Western scientists will be as eager to try to learn about and use Eastern methodologies as the Chinese and Japanese certainly have been to use our own. And I would like to thank the members of the Traditional Acupuncture Foundation for affording me this opportunity, Jonathan Clate for providing my first introduction to acupuncture and encouraging me to give this seminar, and of course for all those present here. Thank you. If anyone has any questions or would like to discuss it further, I'll stay here forever.